This is a special election edition of Route 51. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg today. The November 6th midterm elections are just 12 days away. Today on Route 51, we welcome the candidates for Wisconsin's 29th State Senate District. Republican incumbent Jerry Petrosky of Marathon and Democrat Richard Polcher of Lublin. The winning candidate will represent constituents across Marathon, Taylor, Rusk, and Sawyer counties, as well as small parts of Wood and Clark counties. This includes the communities of Wausau, Marathon, Hayward, Ladysmith, Medford, Athens, Lublin, Mosinee, and many more. We want to hear from you, especially if you live and or work in the 29th State Senate District. Call us at 800-780-9742. Again, that phone number to call is 800-780-9742. Let's quickly introduce the candidates. Jerry Petrosky of Marathon. Senator Petrosky is the Republican incumbent for the 29th District. His career in politics started 20 years ago when he was first elected to the State Assembly back in 1998. He served there until he was elected to the State Senate in a special election in 2012. Senator Petrosky chairs the Senate Committee on Transportation and Veterans Affairs, serves as vice chair on the Committee on Natural Resources and Energy, and the Committee on Economic Development, Commerce, and Local Government. He's also a member of the Committees on Agriculture, Small Business, Tourism, Joint Legislative Council, and the Special Committee on State-Tribal Relations. Senator Petrosky, welcome back to Route 51.
Good morning, Rick.
Richard Polcher of Lublin is the Democrat candidate for the race. Richard Polcher is a retired union member and former union steward of Teamsters Local 662. In retirement, he's been active in politics and is serving as the Taylor County Democratic Chair. He comes from a healthcare background and worked at the Clark County Healthcare Center for nearly 20 years. Mr. Polcher's campaign platform centers around education, higher wages, and accessible health care. He was a Democratic candidate for the 87th State Assembly back in 2014. Richard Polcher, welcome to Route 51.
Thank you for having me.
Listeners, do you feel heard by your legislators? This is your chance to speak directly to the candidates running for the 29th State Senate District. What connections do you see between local, state, and national politics? Call now at 800-780-9742. First question today, starting with Richard Polcher, why should you represent the 29th District?
Well, there are a lot of things going on in Wisconsin that really aren't all that good. If you listen to Scott Walker's ads, things are wonderful. We have voted twice to raise our taxes to help save our local school. Teachers have a hard time staying in their school. Act 10 has chased a lot of teachers away. Our roads are crumbling. And this summer, our local village board passed a resolution demanding that the state funding program be somehow straightened away. I'm sure Mr. Petrosky knows more about this than I do. All I know about is the problems with it.
Senator Petrosky, why should you continue to represent the 29th District?
Well, I have worked on a lot of issues and kind of allow a long background of things that I have done in my past life, plus whatever in the legislature. I work on a lot of policy. I work on a lot of bills. And I do things that I feel that are important and trying to get them done. And like with all legislation, it comes down to finding the dollars for it and finding the votes in order to pass it. And, you know, I do probably more policy than most of the legislators do, and I think that benefits our area. I've worked on a lot of things that, you know, save lives, whether it be CPR in our schools, whether it be dispatcher-trained CPR. Those are things that save lives across our state. And, you know, I live in central Wisconsin. I've lived here all my life. I love the area I represent. I love the people that live here because this is home, but it's more than home. I think this is a special place that we live in, and I want to make sure that it isn't only for us. I want to make sure that there are enough opportunities here so that our children, our grandchildren, can find a livelihood here when they get out of college. I don't like the idea of what we talk about, the brain drain, with people going to New York or to the West Coast or whatever. And I think a lot of parents would love to see their kids locate close to home. So that families can interact together, and I think that's a real positive for our community.
Thank you both for that. Heading to the issues right now, Wisconsin has about 12,000 miles of state highways and about another 100,000 miles of local roads. And as voters head to the polls this fall, the quality of this infrastructure is something they're thinking about. In an official statement at the beginning of the year, Transportation Development Association of Wisconsin Director Craig Thompson said, "The state of transportation in Wisconsin is poor and declining, and there's no plan to reverse the trend." Last month, WAOW News 9 reported bumpy roads around the Wausau area cost drivers $1,517 per year, according to a report released by National Transportation Research Group, TRIP. And this remains a very large issue in the governor's race. In fact, the latest Marquette University Law School poll indicates it may be the best indicator of the divide between the major party candidates. The latest poll shows that while 64% of Wisconsin residents think their roads are in fair or poor condition, 61% of registered voters said it was more important to keep the gas taxes and vehicle registration fees where they are right now. In other words, we want better roads, but we don't necessarily want to pay for them out of our own pockets. Senator Petrosky, you chair the Senate Committee on Transportation and Veterans Affairs. Where do we start, or what are you contemplating and doing to address the issue in transportation road funding?
Okay. There's a wide range of topics all part of this.
Absolutely.
And I think it's fair to say that we spend about $3.8 billion on transportation over a budget cycle. The problem isn't so much of that we don't get enough money taken in. The problem, as I see it, is that we're spending a lot on debt service to take care of the debt that was put in place over the last 30 years. And that money directly is a reduction on what local governments could get and whatever. 4 years ago about, we did a 4% increase for transportation aids to local roads. This budget, we put in 8%. We also increased the LRIP programs, the local road improvement programs, by 12%. Now, is that enough? No, I don't think it is. What you have in some of the communities is that they don't really have that much of a tax base, and so they're really dependent on those road aids and shared revenue and things like that. I don't think there is an easy answer. The easiest part would be probably to shift some of the sales tax revenue that actually is transportation related. Autos, auto-related parts, and we could move those millions into the transportation fund and use it to upgrade our roads. There is going to be no easy answers. I'm a little bit in dispute with some of the claims that the roads are so bad. I travel around my district. I travel around my state. And is there some need of repair in those roads? Of course. There's potholes. There's whatever. Is it worse than it was 10 years ago? Maybe somewhat, but I don't think it's that detrimentally worse compared to other states that I've driven in. And so, you know, we can move forward. I think legitimately the governor has made some commitments recently to put in probably an additional $200 million in this next budget for local road aids. And I think there are some things we can do for cleanup. And I think it's important to realize also that prior years, some of the governors had taken money out of transportation and used for other things. In fact, one of our governors took, I think, $1.4 billion, and then transportation had to borrow the money back and pay that debt service. We did the constitutional amendment. I actually was the author of that, first in the Assembly and second in the Senate. It passed by 82%. After that, we went ahead and we audited the department to see if there was efficiencies and things that we could find that would save us money and make the department do a better job. Now, we did pass quite a few of those recommendations from the audit committee this last session, so they will be in effect. We went through and we did some of what they call the shift federal for state, where we're using federal money on a lot of the big projects and trying to free up that money so that state dollars can be used for some of the local projects to eliminate some of the requirements by the federal government. So that saves us money. There are some things that I would also like to look at in that when you're dealing, like, say, with counties and their transportation aids, their payments are based on a six-year rolling average so that if they're spending less, they get less. But sometimes just because of the fluctuations, that has a dramatic effect on how many dollars they're getting. And then you couple that with the other part of the formula, and that's the whole state spending on those people that are on that share of cost reimbursement. So if everybody across the state is spending more money and you're spending less, you're going to get, you know, quite a bit less. And I'd like to divide that up into different pots so that, you know, what's going on in Milwaukee doesn't have a big effect on what's going on in Mosinee. And I think that would make some sense. And I've run that idea past a couple of people in the last couple of months. And I think that's something that I plan on working on and finding an answer. And I don't know yet if I want to divide it up to three different sizes of municipalities. And the ones that come into that share of cost, they are towns that are over 5,000 and then cities and villages. What we have for the towns that are under 5,000, they just get a flat rate so much per mile. And so there's a lot of things to be talked about on mm-hmm. transportation funding, and I could probably talk for half an hour on it. But I think that gives you a clear picture. And I think the fact about putting more money in, I think, is helpful to local governments. We did have a bill last time dealing with an additional portion of sales tax, and it was really trying to focus on rural areas of the state to help them. The problem was is that those rural areas don't have a lot of sales tax base because they don't have a lot of retail. And so, again, the big communities would have benefited, and the people who were trying to help the small communities probably would not have benefited that much.
Okay. Richard Poulter, if elected, how would you work with your legislative colleagues to address the issue?
Well, I might begin by saying that Governor Walker refused money from the federal government for high-speed rail. He did this for political reasons. And another thing is that they quit indexing according to the rate of inflation on the gas tax, which has only added to the problem. Now, one of the things that I would like to see is passenger rail. There's a great big railroad that goes right through my backyard. Well, not through it. It's on the edge of it. I have to go to Toma to get on a train. It would be nice if somewhere along that line there was some kind of thing for passengers to get on and ride. They could get on in northern Wisconsin and ride throughout the entire country. I agree with Mr. Petrowski that we need to address this, and we need to address it honestly, openly, and vigorously. I remember back in the 1970s, a friend of mine asked me about whether he should, or I overheard a conversation between two friends where one asked, should I take a blue road or a four-lane highway? The four-lane highway is about twice as far, but the blue road, I don't know if it would be very good. And the other person answered, there are no bad roads in Wisconsin. Today, that is certainly not the case.
Rick, can I comment?
Absolutely, go ahead.
Well, and transportation isn't just what we view as trucks and cars. It also includes our harbor, our airlines, our airports, and along with rail. The indexing occurred basically because people felt that why do we keep on putting more money into transportation if it's going to be taken out of transportation and used for something else? I think people were satisfied if it was going into transportation, and that's why that ended up passing the legislature. On the high-speed rail, I don't so much think it was political as it was there was going to be additional cost with that because, yes, they gave you that many dollars to go between Milwaukee and Madison, but ultimately you'd have to do a lot of overpasses and underpasses because you can't have those rails going that fast through a community. And that additional overpass and underpasses would have cost us huge amounts of money that we didn't have, especially coming out of the Great Recession.
Richard Poulter, would you like to comment on that? Or
Not really.
Okay. a similar issue with respect to infrastructure is that of broadband. And broadband is an issue specifically in the rural districts like the 29th State Senate District, making sure that people have the opportunity to have the internet on a very reliable basis. What is a goal that you would have, Richard Poulter, to increase broadband opportunities in districts like the 29th?
Well, I would like the state to become involved in pursuing this. Broadband, or lack of broadband, it keeps people from coming, keeps businesses from coming to this area. And with broadband, you can work from your home in your underwear. If you have to, and also you take larger companies who actually need a great amount of internet service, won't come to an area that doesn't have reliable broadband. I think it's absolutely important that we get it, and the state should do everything they can to promote it.
Jerry Petreski?
Yeah, this is one of the things I have on my to-do list also. And it truly is important for a whole variety of reasons. In the North Woods, in our schools, young people are getting notebooks and tablets and everything else, and they have to do their homework on them. So if they don't have internet service at home, they have to either stay after school in the library or go down to the McDonald's and try to hook up there or some way. And, in fact, if we want, you know, our students to play a role in that 21st century technology, we really do have to have broadband across the North Woods, not just the North Woods, but all the rural areas of Wisconsin. And even the resorts up north, it's getting to a point where people call up and ask if they have broadband. And if they don't have it, they look for a different resort to stay at. So it harms tourism also. I know that we have put in hundreds of millions of dollars of state and federal money into expanding broadband across Wisconsin. Is that enough? No, it isn't. There are some states that are doing, I think, a nicer job. And part of it is, you know, I think it has to be a short-term and a long-term plan where maybe we use wireless as a stepping stone to get, you know, the fiber optic cables buried. One of the states is going ahead and even formed a co-op that's all they do is bury fiber optics. They're putting small cell towers in the right-of-way along the highways, and I think that's part of the solution. Some of the countries overseas, they have a lot more satellites up that they utilize. But one thing for sure, if we're going to participate as rural Wisconsin in that 21st century economy, broadband is going to play a huge role. And I think we're going to have to do some more investment, you know, possibly even a pilot program with three or four of different counties working together to show what they can really do with X number of dollars. And you know what the resistance is going to be. Companies that are in that telecommunications business, of course, if there's not a return on investment, they're not going to want to locate there. And we have done some, I think, good things with it. We have a lot more to do, and it needs to happen.
We're talking with the Republican incumbent Jerry Petreski and his challenger, Democrat Richard Poulter, candidates for the state's Senate, 29th State Senate District. If you'd like to join the conversation, you can call us at 800-780-9742. The Wisconsin Department of Workforce Development reports that Wisconsin's unemployment rate is at historic lows, now at 3%, with Marathon and Taylor counties at 2.7% and 2.4%, respectively, and Rusk and Sawyer counties at 3.6% and 3.7%. Last week, the U.S. Department of Labor announced Wisconsin added nearly 23,000 manufacturing jobs between September of 2017 and September of 2018, ranking it second in the nation. Yet, at the same time, there are many businesses, especially in manufacturing and service industry, that are facing a worker quantity challenge. For example, Bob Schneider of Executive Cleaning in Wausau has had to turn down $500,000 in sales because he doesn't have enough people to work and do the to do the job. J&D tube benders. Tom Felch reports that he's 10 to 15 people short in his current staff, and he's adding on to his business, and he's going to be another 10 to 15 employees short. What can we do to fill the jobs that are open, starting with Jerry Petrosky?
Thank you. The worker shortage is, I think, in almost every industry out there. You look at Marin County, and you have major industries like Greeneck, Jarp, shooting metals. Then we have welders. A lot of the welders, probably 50% of them, are getting close to retirement, and we don't have welders to fill that gap. We've done some interesting things with the tech, with the fast-forward grants to train, to do all those things. In fact, we offered a welding program at the Marin County Jail, and I'm told that they qualified 25 people to take that welding course, and a year later after they graduated, they're working as welders, and they're not reoffending. So, you know, I think we need to duplicate that over and over again. Every company I talk to is really looking for workers. And so, you know, how do we get those workers there? It's going to take training. We're in a situation where unemployment is so low. There's more people working in the state than have ever worked in the state in probably 50 years. And so it's going to be a challenge. And I think, you know, you try to work on this in a lot of ways, trying to move people from that are incarcerated back into the workforce, taking people that aren't working now and trying to get them into the workforce. Even there's such a demand that some of the people that are on retirement are thinking about, you know, going back into the workforce. And I think it takes a combination of all of that. The main thing about having opportunities here, it will raise the price of wages. And I think there's opportunity for our young people, rather than going someplace else, to find work here in the state of Wisconsin that they can make a good living at.
Richard Polcher, on your website, you state the wages as a critical piece of your platform. How do you see the state working to address this challenge of a shortage of workers in our community?
One word, unions. Our union, Teamsters Local 662, had been actually approached by businesses. One of the problems with a new hire is it takes 6 months before they make that business any money at all. And if you're going to be hiring people and then 6 months they're going to be leaving, where are you? So unions, they spend, well, when I was negotiating contracts, we would spend 5 or 6 sessions over a couple of months strictly on working conditions and letting seniority be part of that discussion. When it came to economics, we would get it done in a day. In order to draw people to know that they have protections at work, to know that staying in the job is going to be worthwhile because they have protections for seniority, that's one of the things that the Walker administration has been saying, oh, unions are bad, unions are bad, unions are bad. Even in one of his recent ads, he says the unions will be back in control. You know, I would like to explain to Mr. Walker one thing. The only thing that unions have control over is wages, hours, and conditions of employment. They are not in control of anything for the business except in how they treat their workers. And knowing that workers have a strong union base to know that they will be, that they have legal rights that will be protected, is important in getting people to come here and stay here.
On the back to the fast forward grants through the technical college, and I think our local NTC here has an increase in the admissions, you know, 10% per year. And the people that are graduating from there, 90-some percent find jobs in the field that they're looking for. So I think that is going to be a huge help, and we invested a lot of money in those fast-forward grants. But I can also tell you that some of the businesses that are out there, especially long-term care, are really struggling because the reimbursement rates are low, in fact, and to make the business viable, they're too low. And as soon as somebody offers these workers a job where the benefits are better, they leave. They go on to something else. And so that is going to be something else that I would like to work on. I've met with a lot of the long-term care, people that have nursing homes, CBRFs, things like that. And I think there is a number of places that we could reduce some of the duplication and save them some money and make it easier for these workers to get trained and to have a plan where they can excel in going from a nursing assistant to an LPN to an RN, and so that they have a vision about where things could turn their life, you know, and make it a lot better. And I think those are things that we need to really find a way to get to.
Richard Pulcher.
Mr. Petrowski voted for Act 10. I hope he had read it, and I hope he understood what he was voting for when he voted for it. I lived through Act 10. I was a union steward when it was passed and when it was implemented. Under Act 10, every worker in Clark County Healthcare Center was better off last year than this year. We no longer had the ability to negotiate working conditions, and we could not get a raise that was more than inflation. So everybody there was better off this year than next year. You cannot get people to stay for that. And I might add, with all the problems at Lincoln Hills, I think many of them could have been avoided if the workers could have negotiated their working conditions.
Well, Act 10 is probably about 8 years ago now, and the state was faced with a $3.8 billion deficit, and that hadn't been a deficit that all of a sudden happened. That had been ongoing for a number of years, even though there was huge tax increases back during the Doyle administration. Problems need to be solved. Sometimes the solutions are tough. But I think it came down to, do you lay off thousands of workers across the state, or do you find a way to make it work? And I think with the place where we are right now, you know, we have a very low unemployment, whether the average is 2.8% or 3%. I think we're looking at a future that is bright, where there's opportunity for everybody. And I think Wisconsin, in the whole scheme of things, is doing very well.
You're listening to a special 29th State Senate District candidate debate on Route 51. This district covers Marathon, Taylor, Rusk, and Sawyer counties, as well as a small part of Wood and Clark counties. If you live in Marathon, Wausau, Hayward, Ladysmith, to name a few, this is your district. I'm Rick Ryer in for Glenn Moberg. The two candidates in the November 6th general election are with us in the studio today, Democrat Richard Pulcher of Lublin and Republican incumbent Jerry Petrowski of Marathon. We'll return our attention to health care and education following the break. This is Route 51 on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're back on Route 51 with the candidates for Wisconsin's 29th State Senate District, Republican incumbent Jerry Petrowski and Democrat Richard Pulcher. What concerns you most about your local community, about the state as a whole and its importance to the national scene? Help us move beyond the talking points by calling 800-780-9742. Again, that's 1-800-780-9742. Healthcare is a top issue for Wisconsinites. While this is an issue we could be debating and talking about for more than an hour, I'd like to focus on three areas. First, accessibility and affordability. How can we effectively balance the needs of consumers and providers to ensure high-quality care, especially for those most vulnerable, the disabled and elderly? Richard Pulcher, would you start?
Well, first of all, I would like to say accessibility, I believe, is very good. I was a firefighter for over 20 years and an EMT basic for 7. Anyone, anywhere in Wisconsin, if they dial 911, help will be there almost immediately. The affordability is another question. We have had people who were in a great deal of hurt who refused our ambulance service because they were afraid of what the bill might be. So the affordability is front and center of where our problems are. We have the best medical system that we've ever had. We just can't afford it. And one of the reasons, one of the things you can do is you can look to insurance, where insurance can, you can get a policy and it'll cover you if something catastrophic happens. When I was on, the insurance thing with Clark County Healthcare Center, they were self-insured. And at a meeting one time, we thought that we could lower the, our costs because having everybody under one plan, we would get some bargaining power. And when they went to talk to some of the providers, we have a few main providers in the area, and the response was, where else are they going to go? So we were stuck. That plan eventually went bankrupt. The plan that Clark County now has is through our union. It's a Central States plan. And remarkably, the administration is worried about losing the union more so than the workers are.
Jerry Petrosky.
Yeah, again, Rick, not a simple topic, many different facets. I can remember, you know, Wisconsin's North Woods, where there were people that had to travel an hour to get to a clinic, to a doctor. And because of Marshfield Clinic and Spirus and some others, we now have some dental clinics, some FQHCs. We have clinics in a lot of the major communities, and I think people have access that they didn't have, you know, 25, 30 years ago, which is really, I think, good in so many ways. There are still some problems that need to be worked on, and we continue to look at things like ambulance service. And I had actually spent some time on this because, you know, how do you equate this? Every community has to have ambulance service that they're contracted with, I believe. And what happens sometimes if they're a volunteer, they can't respond because either the ambulance is out or there's not enough people there as volunteers that can do this. And so who's ever the dispatcher has to send an ambulance from someplace else that that community isn't contracted with. Well, there's a payment from the place that's doing the contracting, the community, and then there's also a payment from medical assistance. In some of the cases when they have to go to a different ambulance, they don't get that other payment from the local municipality. And so they're kind of shortchanged. And I think the way it should work is that the closest ambulance service should take the call to guarantee that people have the best opportunity to get life-saving medication or handling to a, you know, facility like the hospital or whatever as fast as they can. I looked at in how you can, you know, come together to make that work in the state of Wisconsin. And it came down to having three different things. One, they would get the MA payment. They would get a certain stipend from the local municipality that's contracted or that should be contracted. And then also there should be a mileage thing. So everybody would have the quickest care that would be possible. And I think that's one of the things that's looked at. You know, we have taken and put more money into a lot of things, into nursing homes. We've raised the reimbursement rate about $38 million. We've increased by 4% the rates for the workers that are there. We've gone ahead and have something called DSH payments that go to disproportional hospitals that deal in a lot of MA, medical assistance. And we put in, you know, millions of dollars into that. All those things help. Are they the total answer? No, they're not. We've gone ahead and stuck another $200 million into helping buy down rates under the Affordable Care Act. So there are a lot of things going on. Health care isn't, you know, is the most important thing there is when you need it. And, you know, there's a lot of facets to this issue. I'm hopeful that we continue to make progress with this and make sure that the citizens of the state of Wisconsin, especially central northern Wisconsin, have the benefits of having the best health care in the world, because I remember what it was like when it was tough to get to a doctor when you really lived in rural areas.
One of those facets is mental health. It's an issue you both are pretty passionate about. Last year, Governor Walker directed the Department of Health Services to improve access to treatment for those battling mental health and substance use disorders by increasing the investment in behavioral health services. Senator Petrusky, you've authored legislation on mental health reform. Richard Pulcher, you've spent nearly two decades at the Clark County Health Care Center working with individuals. Where do you want to see mental health issues, and how do you want to see them addressed in the next legislative session? Senator Petrusky.
Well, I think there are a number of things we have to do. We have to get more of those counselors, of psychiatrists into the state. I have done a number of bills that will help. One is delivering those mental health services over the internet, computer, telephone, whatever, and also to be able to get psychiatrists and counselors from other states to go ahead and partake in the needs of Wisconsin. I also authored a bill dealing with a lot of the veterans. You know, we have a high suicide rate among the veterans, and making every county have local services or offering a grant so that they can have that, I think, is really important in saving those lives. When somebody is thinking about suicide, they need services now, not to be called back 2 days later or whatever. And so we went ahead and, when the federal government either discontinued the program or it wasn't available, we went in and filled that gap so that veterans across our state have the ability to have those services. And I believe after the end of next June, I think the feds are going to come back with a program that will continue on what we're doing in the state of Wisconsin.
Richard Pulcher.
Well, I believe that we need to get better Medicare for our health care facilities. Veterans committing suicide is just heartbreaking. These people, they were ready to give their life for their country, and when they come back, they think their life isn't worth it. That's just not right. You know, you can mention psychiatrists and everything all you want. I think the biggest thing that we need to do is to bring it out into the open, destigmatize it. I heard one time that suicide is a spur-of-the-moment act. If you can stop that momentary thing, you can – they're not suicidal. It's just that at that time when they put the gun in their mouth or whatever, it's just something they do on the spur of the moment. I know people who have committed suicide, and I think part of it – is they don't think they're appreciated. They think that their life is not going anywhere. I don't personally believe that professionals will help stop it. It's people on the street. And if you can somehow destigmatize it with the general public, maybe there's a lot that we can prevent. Now, as far as other healthcare issues, on the ambulance, we're always ready. And when we go out on a call, there's someone standing by. I just want to make sure that people know that.
Closely tied to this, the mental health issues and that we're currently facing as a state, is the heroin and opioid epidemic. Both of you have signaled this out in your campaigns. Richard Pulcher, how do we make meaningful progress on this crisis? And if elected, what legislation would you look at introducing?
The biggest thing that I can think of is mental health prior to the actual pain. Opioids are pain relief. And I have taken a young lady into my care who is addicted, and she was doing all this stuff. The problem was that she was assaulted when she was 11. And in our court system, they took and arrested her assaulter, but they left her alone until she became a lawbreaker. Now, if they had started with her when she was 11 and given her the mental health care that she desperately needed, a whole lot of problems could have been avoided.
Jerry Petresky, in the last session, yes, Governor Walker signed two of your bills under the HOPE package, HOPE standing for Heroin, Opioid Prevention, Education. How will these bills and others make meaningful progress on the crisis?
Well, they were part of an overall HOPE package that had almost 30 bills in it. And it was tightening up certain things where either there was codeine that was being sold over the counter. We made all those drugs with codeine class 5. We looked at all the different things that would contribute to trying to restrict the drugs from being utilized. And, you know, some of the medications that are out there today are so addictive, if a person takes them once, they're hooked. And there's even some legislators that had children that were hooked. And it is a heartbreak because their whole lives are tipped upside down. I wanted to go back just briefly about talking about the suicide veterans. You know, and there's possibilities. We looked at, you know, the possibility of doing a state hotline for veterans that need to talk. One of the best things they can do is talk to another veteran, somebody that has experienced some of the same problems. And I think we have some groups that meet around WASA, and there somebody can come in and they can talk to other veterans who have had the same experiences. And that seems really to help from what I hear from these different people. And it's things like that I think really make a difference. You asked about what we'd like to do, what I'd like to see done in the future. That's one of the things I'd like to find a way to really help these veterans that are struggling. And the whole drug topic, because that's, you know, a real problem. You know, our jails are full, our prisons are full, and a lot of it has to do with direct relationship to either drugs or stealing something in order to buy more drugs or along those lines. And there are treatment that we can do, treatment incarceration, the THAAD program. We've continually put more money into those, and I think that will take us to a better place. You talked about the things in healthcare that I think are important, and I talked about it before, things that save lives. I think that's probably the things that I'm the most proud of that I've worked on are things that I know will save lives across the state, whether it be the CPR in our schools, that training in health class, or the dispatcher-trained CPR. Or I did a bill a couple of years ago called pulse oximetry. And pulse oximetry is requiring that newborns are tested for heart defects. And there was probably half of the hospitals weren't doing it. And by the time that they would find out that there was a problem, maybe 8 months later, by the time they got to the hospital, the poor child was gone. And that is devastating to a family. I was able to get that passed and signed into a law. And I know that it'll save 10 lives a year just in the state of Wisconsin. And to me, that really makes a difference because we have the technology in healthcare now to save children that have a heart defect. We just have to get them there soon enough.
I'm sorry, go ahead.
I talked to one sergeant major that was 32 years in the military, and he called me because the doctor had just come in and told him that his grandson, his only grandson, now after the surgery is going to be able to do everything that every other grandchild is able to do, play football, play soccer, and all those things. And the guy was just overwhelmed because the doctor told him if he didn't get his grandson there right away, he would have been lost.
Dave is on the line from Rothschild. He has a question for both of you regarding wages and employment. Dave, you're on the air.
Hi, I'm Dave. I'm on a break at work right now. I'm 55 years old. I've lived in Wausau over 30 years, and I can tell you that there's a conspiracy between all the major employers from white-collar, blue-collar to this very day to pay only between $12 and $13 an hour. And I have a master's degree, and I've applied to factories for years that supposedly pay well, just can't seem to hire me. And I know there's a lot of the white-collar ones, WPS, Aquafinance have terrible reputations, low pay, and they burn out people so fast. But so when these companies say, we can't find workers, well, they're not trying, and they don't want to invest anything in their employees at all. They expect government to do that. And their business taxes have been reduced to virtually nil. So they're pocketing all that as profits. So I don't feel sorry for them one bit. And it angers me so much that I've got two kids, one in college, one just graduated, one's living in Chicago. The other one's in Eau Claire. I'm going to tell him, get out of the state. It's a Republican paradise similar to Alabama. It's just so backwards because the Republicans have a stranglehold in the state. We'll never get the unions back, and it's just been destroyed.
Thanks, Dave. So, Jerry, would you like to
I wish I never stayed in Washington.
Would you like to respond to that?
Sure. I don't know what Dave's master's is in, but I can tell you that places like Greenock, because of the need for more workers, has increased their pay substantially from what it was, and it's because of the shortage of workers. If you have a product that you're making that you want to sell, of course, if you can make money, you're going to want to expand and grow. That's the way business is. And for those businesses that are faced with this shortage of labor, they want to do everything they can do to continue to grow and manufacture and sell their products around the world.
Richard Pulcher?
Well, I hope you're wrong about we'll never get the unions back. Part of it is just to make it easier for them, for workers, to form a union. To, you know, like, I'm going back to Act 10 again. That was that the very purpose of Act 10 was lower wages, and in that respect it was successful. But it's done some bad things to Wisconsin. And now it's starting to become unavoidable that we have these problems.
We'll be back right after this. We're back on Route 51. We're talking with the candidates for Wisconsin's 29th State Senate District seat, Republican incumbent Jerry Petruski and his Democratic challenger Richard Pulcher. Gentlemen, on October 1st, President Trump announced a new trade agreement between the U.S., Mexico, and Canada. This was also a major talking point at the president's rally last night at the Central Wisconsin Airport. He specifically pointed to Canada opening its dairy markets to U.S. producers, especially here in Wisconsin. I'm interested in your perspectives on this agreement as it relates to not only dairy farmers, but also producers of cranberries, ginseng, and other products here in Wisconsin and in the 29th State Senate seat. Richard Pulcher, briefly, if you could share your comments on the trade pact that it with Mexico and Canada.
Well, I would like to comment this. As a Democrat, I very rarely like to compliment Trump. However, one of the problems with our trade agreements, the NAFTA, was investor protections. And that meant that a foreign company could come into Wisconsin, and if we tried to regulate them, they could sue us if the regulation caused them to make less than what they expected to make when they made the investment. Those investor protections are virtually gone from our new trade agreements. As far as milk, good luck with that. I had I talked to a Canadian farmer. They have milk marketing boards. They don't have a surplus, and they're very happy with their situation.
Jerry Petruski.
Well, I think there's a number of things in that will help. The fact that manufacturing jobs are increasing, Wisconsin's second in the nation, has to do with the changes in those trade agreements. The companies that moved to Mexico for the auto, I think, are going to move back. Trying to get a handle on the industry, the ag industry, 25% of our economy and of our jobs are tied to agriculture, not just milk, but cranberries, potatoes, cheese, pork, beef, all the commodities. And I think it's so important that we get a fair shake. Fair trade is what it should be. I think you'll see in the future that we're going to be doing much better as far as milk prices. And it is my hope that that continues to grow. In Canada, they have something different called the quota system, where they're paid substantially more, but only for a given amount of milk. But anyway, it's been great being on the air today. So thank you, Rick.
Thank you. Sorry to rush you in the last question. Thank you both to our guests today, candidates for Wisconsin's 29th State Senate District, Republican incumbent Jerry Petruski and Democrat Richard Poulter. Taylor Pomisel produced today's program. Our on-air producer today is Joy Ratchkramer. Thanks for listening. Until then, next week, we're heading out of town.